WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive is alive. Even though we only got like 6 hours of daylight, I feel like I live in Sweden or something above the Arctic Circle at this point. The last time I was with this guy, I probably was on some heavy medication. I was on some prednisone. I was sort of raging before they calmed me with spinal infusion. I took needles into my spine. I haven't talked about this on the radio yet. I've actually probably done 30 segments this week about the Vikings, the Ravens, the Twins, Congress, the NFL. Bill Cole is here. He is Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy. I have the mug. Dude, we do so much BS, and I'm out of Rofo coffee in here. I have to ring a ding, Luke. It's been a couple weeks, man. How are you? How are things? It was before my birthday. You were going to like Philadelphia. It's been like almost a month, and what a month it's been.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out whether it's a problem that I don't know the difference when you're heavily medicated or when you're not, or that we're going to talk about spinal infusions, and I'm wholly unqualified to even mention anything. I think, but either one of those are totally okay.
You ever had a spinal infusion?
No, I've not had a
spinal infusion. I would not recommend it. I mean, I would if you hurt, because it kind of helped, you know.
Right.
It did help, and that kind of helped. I'm 2 weeks out on having needles in both sides of my spine that they do with an X-ray MRI, and they find the exact nerve that's causing me to be sideways and in agony, literally. It got to agony. It went from discomfort that really hurts to I can make it better with some ice and some this and some that, to my wife not being here, to me crawling to the car, to me not being able to get out of bed on my birthday, to not being able to like move, to then having
horrible.
Some, yeah, it was not good, dude. It was from, you know, October 8th through the 21st. I don't even know. I did radio, I did video, I made things happen. I even closed the deal. Thank you, Nacho Mamas. Welcome. But I would say, when you're in it and you're in that kind, you want to die. I mean, literally, you're like, I could not live and function like this. I don't want to be medical about like all of that stuff, but dude, it being infirmed is no fun, you know. And my poor wife taking care of me, even worse, trust me,
right?
No fun
and then
for her.
Just the realization that modern medicine is in a place where they're diagnosing your spine and able to stick needles and relieve pain. I mean,
what the hell did we do in the 80s when this happened, other than heroin, cocaine, Doan's back pills?
Self-medicating, right,
you know, I don't know if I was in that sort of pain for longer than the 8 to 10 days that I was really not able to sit, stand, lay.
People were tougher. People were just tougher.
Oh,
that's
come
all.
On. Oh, yeah, they walked in more comfortable
shoes
in the
uphill,
rain, up the hill,
the snow,
right, this
right,
time of year.
Yeah.
Bill, I didn't even want to talk about back pain or whatever. I have a wild experience I'll share with you. So little back dreaming. My last name's Aparicio. I grew up really baseball obsessed, right? Like, baseball cards, baseball players. My first memory is probably the 72 World Series, and very vivid memories of Rusty Staub in 73, 74, Felix Mion and Buddy Harrelson, about 73. But like, you know, the Fisk home run all the way through. Chambliss in 76, Reggie, every year. 79, got to go to the World Series, all of that. And I remember Freddie Patek crying in the dugout. And I remember, you know, Dick Houser in the 80s and all that. All I ever wanted to do was my bucket list, before we called it a bucket list thing, as a kid, and wanting to be a sports writer, which I did, and work at the paper and get a press pass, was to be in a winning baseball clubhouse. And like the champagne and all the things
right.
we saw in 79, 83.
Right.
So in 1995... So I went to World Series games. I went to games in 79, 83, 86, the Shea Stadium, Mets, Red Sox, went to one of those games. And then I got on the beat for baseball in 92. I almost went to the 92 World Series in Pittsburgh. I was holding tickets, but they didn't win. The Sid Bream game happened, so I didn't get to go. 93, I went to every game. So I was in Philadelphia. I was in Toronto. I drove with friends. I had tickets. I was there when Joe Carter hit the home run. I did not go in the clubhouse. I was a Phillies fan. I was with a girl. We went out on the streets. We did what boys and girls did at that time. And then in 94, there was a strike. There was no World Series, right? And I'm on the radio. We have no football here. How old were you in 94, 95? What's your experience there? You're at Calvert Hall. Where are you?
Yeah, freshman, sophomore at Calvert Hall. Yep. I mean, I remember definitely the Phillies and Carter.
Well, of course you do, because you're like went to Calvert Hall and Camden Yards opened in 92, right?
Like,
so we're talking about
the
glory era
stuff,
right?
Yeah, sure. Yep.
You watched every one of those World Series games in 95, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Indians, yeah. Eddie Murray, Dennis Martinez, Jim Thome, Jim Poole, all
sure.
sorts of cast of characters that either Leo Mazzoni, a lot of people that would be Orioles later on in life
right.
or whatever.
Sure.
The next year, the Braves had Bielecki and Denny Nagel, which is the picture. You're not on Facebook, but have you seen that picture I shared of Nagel?
No. No.
Oh, you have not seen that? Hold on. So I'll share this with you. I don't pull up the Facebook pictures much, but here you go, dude. This is old school Nasty Nestor. Here you go. If anybody's watching out there, all right? So this you can see behind Bielecki's shoulder says World Series. This is the 96 World Series on the field at Atlanta Fulton County Stadium. So the year before was 95, and I got my years mixed up. Like 97 was the Marlins, right? 96 was the Yankees. So 95, I went to every game, right? Because we didn't have Ravens here, right? The Ravens came during this World Series in Cleveland. I was on the tarmac. There was a girl involved. It was all of this stuff that in 1995.
Yeah.
So when the series went back to Atlanta, my pal Kevin Eck, we flew Southwest Airlines to Birmingham, Alabama, because that's where you flew or you could get into before. What was the airliner that went through Atlanta that had the Tampa that or Orlando and had a value jet? 30 years ago, they had a plane crash.
Right.
Bad stuff happened. So that was the way to get in Atlanta other than Delta, right? Or whatever pre that was. We flew to Birmingham, drove over to Atlanta, went to the game. I remember the Southern food I had at this little place on the edge of the legitimate neighborhood that Atlanta Fulton County Stadium. They were building all the Olympic stuff that would come the next year, right? This was the last... It wasn't the last game in Fulton County because they played the next year there and then they moved to Turner Field, right? But I had a bucket list thing happen in Atlanta. I was in the clubhouse when they won the World Series with a pass. And Ryan Klesko, who I knew, and I knew Glavine a little bit. You know, I knew a couple of the guys. In 96, I knew a lot of the guys, right? And by the time the Yankees won, Nagel was a Yankee in 01, and
right.
I wound up at their team party. It was a long, long night with Roger Clemens' sister and a lot of drinks and crazy stuff, young Derek Jeter. But I did all of this baseball stuff, right? My whole life was baseball, right? So I was in that locker room. Ryan Klesko gave me a drink of the champagne and then dumped it all over my head. And then I had to drive soaked in champagne from the parking lot in Atlanta to Birmingham, 140 miles or whatever. You know, you got to go past Talladega. You get good fried chicken at the gas station. Not like Rofo, but it's Southern. So I fell asleep on game 6 in Houston and I woke up and I saw it. And I just thought about like the last time the Braves won. Cause all these, you know, Brian Cowitz, you know, Brian. Brian was a Brave. Brian's a local, I call him a kid. He's our age, my age, older than you. And he played in this era in Richmond. Guy has a ring, a part of all of it. I offered him, I found the newspaper from the morning after the Atlanta Braves win the 1995. And I have it literally sitting at the radio station. Cowitz, if you're out there, I'm holding it for you. I don't think he had it. And I have a copy. I said, do you want this for your kids? So he was a part of this team. Mike Devereaux was on this team. And so I knew Jim Poole was on the losing team. And, I would just say like where life takes you a half a life later with baseball and the Braves finally winning. I thought the Braves won 10 World Series. Then I realized they never won. They always lost. They always won 114 games and lost, right? Always had the pitching until they went to St. Louis or wherever it was, right? And the baseball thing in my life, your life, because I know if I bring that part of life up, you'd be like, oh my God, baseball was like the most important thing to everybody around here then, right?
It definitely, I mean, I could, like, the All-Star game, and like from there, you know what I mean? It really ramped up from 93 on.
Did you get to go to the All-Star game?
I don't think I went to the All-Star game. I think I went to
Fan Fest.
Like, they had a day before. Yeah, something like that. I think I went.
Well, if you went to the workout, that was the day like Ken Griffey and Gonzalez were hitting them off the second deck.
I think.
Now, you know why that was, right?
They were on steroids.
Oh, yeah, that was part of it. Yeah, yeah.
HGH.
Without question.
Juice ball.
No doubt about it. Lenny Dykstra could not have been on steroids that day. I would just say this. The day after, and this is an old baseball story. It's a guy named Greg Biagini, Biagini. He was the hitting coach for the Johnny Oates Orioles and then the Johnny Oates Texas Rangers. George Bush, Texas Rangers, right? Sure. Of that era. And they had an All-Star game there in 96 too, or 95. 96 was in Philly. Mary Lou Henner comes to me, you know, but the notion that Greg Biagini would come to me 2 days later and say to me, been a hitting coach here a year and a half. I watch BP every day. I've seen Sam Horn try to hit that warehouse. Really? I've seen Sam Horn like heat baseballs up and cork bats and try to hit that warehouse and can't do it. And I've seen Chris Hoyles, these right-handed guys, you know, muscle up.
Sure.
Brady, all these guys trying to hit things during BP for fun. And then he's like, and all of a sudden I'm throwing, but he was one of the pitchers in that day pitching BP. And he's like, they're hitting them 75 feet further than I've ever seen a baseball hit. The balls were baked.
And
this is a professional saying this to me 3 days later. And there's no social media. There's no era. But like, oh, it's a show. It's like when you juice golf balls and they go five. It literally. But it's a circus, right? I mean, people think it's real.
But it is a show and you can't lose sight of that. And that show has seemingly lost all of its gleam for me. I mean, I think what was it on the Saturday? It was like game two or three. I don't even know. And we're kind of doing the Halloween thing, and I'm looking on the television, and there's a baseball game. Oh, and it happens to be the World Series. Oh, and look, the Astros are playing the Braves. Oh, wait, aren't the Astros the ones that cheated? Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to root for the Braves then. So, I mean, that's the extent of the involvement. I think that's what you were kind of getting at.
Where are your kids in this? Because, look, man, I grew up in Colgate and Dundalk. There's no doubt about it. I'm wearing my Coppin State shirt here, by the way. We're about to get some Coppin. I mean, I'm local. And it felt to me in my childhood like baseball was the most important thing in the world. To every kid on my block, every kid I hung out with, every kid I met, when I went to middle school, even if you didn't go to Oriole games or whatever, you knew who Jim Palmer was, you know, you like everybody in the community was invested in a way that I guess that's what Brooks Robinson and Boog Powell and Frank Robinson and Luis Aparicio, you know, if you were Hispanic, you had a Hispanic guy. If you were African-American, you had Frank, you had Paul Blair, you had players, Eddie Murray, you know, like you had something for people to grab onto. And then when the Colts left, you know, I don't want to get too nasty Nestor or get off my porch on my 30th anniversary, but it is coming up on December 13th. You know, that whole era of getting this place built and what the Orioles meant and what baseball meant and how it brought people together, even showing you that picture of Bielecki and Nagel. Dude, I was so proud. There's no picture I'm more proud of in my life than that, at that time in my life, to be on the field at the World Series with a Dundalk High graduate who grew up on Searles Road, and the guy who was the left-handed sensation at Arundel that played for Bernie Walter that went to the Pirates and won 18 games in Hawaii, literally, in the Pirates organization. You know, Bielecki and Nagel was in Minnesota running around for the Twins and then the Pirates. And so these were local kids that I followed in the Baltimore Sun when I was the agate clerk, putting together Marylanders in the minors. We talk about Brian Cowitz and, you know, Carps and like all of these people that were probably in your era was Holcomb at Calvert Hall, Teixeira, and all of these local baseball kids that were dreaming the Ron Swoboda dream, the Louis Aparicio dream, the Denny Nagel dream, the Cal Ripken, Bill Ripken. They were part of this in Aberdeen. Timmy Norris pitched at Curley, and I saw him pitch on the upper fields, you know, as a little boy. He was in the Pony Leagues. But baseball, right, was all of this. And, like, I'm not wistful about it. I'm not even getting off my lawn as I sit here in front of Camden Yards on the video. But it came full circle to me when I thought about the last time the Braves won, all the things I went through. Dude, I drove to Toronto with my buddies in the car. Dave Miller, Swish Morrison, and John Raffalides. We drove across the border in Buffalo, through every town in Pennsylvania, almost hit deer in the middle of the night. You know what I mean? Crazy stuff. In the mountains of Pennsylvania, Corning, New York, you know, like crazy. And that's how much I loved baseball.
And I don't know if it'll ever be that again. I mean, from a kid's standpoint, I do have friends who have sons who are like deep in it. And it's a 12-month in the cage, you know, in the winter. I mean, it's as bonkers as anything else, right? Soccer, lacrosse, I mean – We have figured out a way to totally go over the top with whatever youth sport it is that we want to pick.
I had a great guest this week, Moeller Book, Kevin Lawrence. I'll go listen to that piece. He's a coach, baseball coach up in Southern PA. And we talked about stage parents and full-time job of your kids' volleyball, as I'm wearing my Coppin State volleyball shirt or whatever. That's kind of where it is. And it's not offensive to me, but it's sort of odious. You know, it's sort of like, I'm glad I'm not, you know, I have no thought at 53 and my kid's 37 that they're going to make babies at some point and I'm going to be a stage dad for a 9-year-old, whatever, boy, girl, whether it's cheer or dance or volleyball or softball or, you know, MMA. I mean, I don't know, but like whatever those avenues are of passion, I don't know, man. Well, that probably wouldn't have been good for me in 1979. You know, I was already passionate enough about Led Zeppelin and baseball and the skipjacks and, you know, just girls, roller skating, various things, that if I just would have done all one thing, and I guess we see this with Olympic athletes and stuff, like, it's just it's probably not healthy, bro. You know what I mean?
I think everybody is aligned on this concept that it's not good, but yet we still do it. And what is really disturbing to me is most of the parents that I interact with, none of them are doing any of this because they believe their kid is a pro athlete in any kind. What has evolved now is the rec systems that we grew up playing in have like degraded because all the volunteer parents and the better players,
there is no neighborhood program.
Yeah. They've all moved, right. They've moved to travel or club, which means, you know, you're barely playing the game at the rec level. And there's exceptions obviously, but it's really difficult. You know, not every parent is a coach. You know, not every parent grew up playing, but they want to give their kid the chance. And all you're trying to do is give your kid a shot to, like, make the high school team. Like, that's what my wife and I talk about, right?
Okay,
like,
fair enough. I mean, this is real talk then. I like this.
That's all we're really trying to do is we want them, if they want to play on the high school team, they need to have developed enough to put them in a position.
Oh, I wanted to play on the high school team, but I was never, our baseball team won the state championship in 83 with Chuck. I mean, we had a really, right. really good team at Dundalk.
Sure.
And I wasn't tall enough, big enough, strong. I mean, there were only 15 guys and everybody played baseball. You know what I mean?
Right.
I wrestled, my weight wasn't very good, but like, and the only reason I wrestled my weights because I wasn't very good and nobody else wanted to do it. Right. Right. I mean, that's everybody wanted to play second base when that's the only size you were at that time when you're 5'1", right. Weigh 108 pounds.
there's no guarantees, right. That your kid's going to be able to do that or what the level is. Right. Or, hey, maybe you're walking into a school that the stars have aligned and, you know, they're a state champion. And that just means that Johnny isn't going to make the team because he's not a caliber to play on the state champs. So
your point, you just said something that is old school. It's Greg Brady, make the team, right? You had to make the team, which means you had to get your feelings hurt in Hollabird when you didn't make the basketball team because you weren't tall enough or whatever. You didn't even think of trying out for the Dundalk team because they just would have laughed at you. You know what I mean? Like you just weren't good enough. But that didn't mean that on Friday night you couldn't wave pom-poms for your good buddy John Raffalides, who was good enough to make the team but probably the ninth guy on the team. You know what I mean? Played some JV. And that was an honor. You know, he got to sit on the bench and maybe get some minutes or whatever because the kids were that good that he got to practice with every day. Curtis Schultz's dad was the coach. So at Dundalk,
right?
You know, Ron Schultz. Curtis came to practices as a seventh and eighth grader. I've known Curtis since he was seventh grade, right? He went to DeMatha and played and then played for Gary, like the whole deal, right? He's a trainer at USC now in the Pac-10. He worked for the Bengals. He made me the man I am today. I boxed with him out of Brick Bodies a million years ago. Not with him, but you know, to get in shape. But Curtis would come to Dundalk High up in the jock lot with his dad when he was 12, 13 years old and practice and shoot around with the varsity.
Right, sure.
You know, with my buddies. But like, it was hard to make a team, right? And that's my, and it, but also if nobody comes out for the team or you're in that sort of an environment, the team's not very good, you know, when you get to that point. But I'm with you, like the feeder systems, that makes all the sense in the world that when I go back, that's why Little League games and snowballs aren't being sold at every elementary school baseball field anymore, right?
Well, I mean, look, this is a terrible analogy, but I'm going to make it anyway. Like, what's the number one excuse that all the baseball players use when they were like a mediocre professional player and they get popped for using steroids?
Everybody's doing it.
Yeah. It's this argument that like, if I don't do it, I'm going to lose my livelihood because everybody else is doing it. So in order to just keep up, I'm forced to use steroids. And forget that the argument around that concept, let's not go there, but take that concept and apply it to youth sports where, as a parent, you're looking at the landscape and, you know, there's all these kids that are playing soccer all year round. And if my kid takes a season off, they're that much farther behind their development than all these other kids.
Well, the craziest thing I've seen, the redshirting, right? Like if you're born after July 1st, we'll hold them back a year so that he or she is bigger and stronger and like – That's another really weird concept. And I was always the shrimp because I was born in October and then I skipped a grade. So I was always like a year and a half smaller than everybody, but it was the exact opposite for me. I pushed myself, my parents pushed me ahead academically, but not, it's the exact opposite. It's almost a retardation, the real meaning of the word, to hold someone back and sort of push them to graduate later, do things in life later, give them more time, give them more seasoning, fatten them up a little bit, you know what I mean? Before you send them out to play 8-10 Little League or what. I don't know what point this goes from fun and Johnny learns to play the trumpet or learns to dance or learns to be in the band or whatever they do to obsession. Leonard Raskin came on this week and like his kid – And thoughts out to Leonard. He was out in Ohio State. His kid is in the pep band, the band that plays like at the hockey games. Not the dot the I, hang on Sloopy, the Rush thing, right? You know, the marching band. And he told me the marching band is like they have a whole bunch of them, and it's survival of the fittest. That if you're the backup tuba player, you grade the tuba player that plays and then have to make a case as to why you're the better tuba player to play in the Missouri game next week. Like it's so, and can you imagine what kind of band person you'd have to be, John Zeman, respect, to just be considered to be in the Ohio State band? How much of your life it would take to be one time at band camp, right? And I'm thinking of every aspect of that,
I'm sure doing the important thing,
you know, putting the needles in my back. But like, when it comes down to doing that on the swim team, the volleyball team, like all of that becomes that way. I don't know. I don't think it's healthy.
I'm sure that band thing is identical to the story that we're telling about the sports. I mean, think about it. If it's something that you can practice, you know. Mom and dad are saying to Johnny, hey, Johnny, look, you're going to practice the tuba three times a week. And then we all find out that, Bobby's practicing four times a week. So now we're going to Johnny and said, Johnny, hey, bad news. We got to go to four times a week. Otherwise, Bobby's going to be the tuba player. And you remember all the posters in your room have you dotting the I. Like, do you want to dot the I or not? Like, if you're going to dot the I, we're going to 5 days a week because Bobby's doing four now. And next thing, I mean, and that is every conversation and then trying to unpack.
And this time of year, I guess it's even more taxing, right? Sun starts to go down. It's November. It's cold. Like all of those aspects of whatever the intense thing is, the holidays are coming. We've had masks on for a year and a half. We got political on, all of that. Just getting the kids to school and getting math and social studies has been like friggin' hard enough for now, most people in this country last year.
Now's a good time because I'm a basketball guy at heart and we're finally getting to transition from soccer to basketball. So now it gets fun.
What sports do you do? Basketball, soccer. What are the other sports?
Basketball, soccer, lacrosse. That's pretty much.
Lacrosse.
And my son's like a huge volleyballer now. So,
okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, not baseball. Let's go back to the original topic of me waking up and seeing that like there was a celebration in Atlanta. And I sort of remember the Deion Sanders and the bucket of water with Tim McCarver and that was a gas back in the 90s and whatever. And I do think of us in Baltimore. I've had a bunch of people from Minnesota on this week talking about Target Field and the Twins and their fortunes and the Vikings. And, you know, they were going to contract the Twins. Remember that? They were going to lose their franchise at one point. They built them a palace, and then they had to get their stadiums built and all that. And I'm thinking about all these municipalities, and I haven't said this to you or anybody else, but they got a 2-year sort of bendable lease here the next 2 years. Things have to get better around here for baseball. And I, you know, on the back end of a World Series that nobody around here is watching, you know, I go up on the timeline and whatever and see where it was and where my heart was with Denny Nagel and Mike Bielecki and all of these names that are, you know, old geezer names to your kids, and your kids don't even like baseball. So now I'm starting to, when you take your kid to a baseball game, they love sports. Uncle Nestor's got tickets and we're going to go down, we're going to hang at Ness and Jen and we're going to get some food and we're going to go somewhere good and we're going to hang in the city and we're going to go to Fadley's and get a crab cake and go to the game. When they go down there, how many times have they been? I mean, give me a kid's through your, because you love this stuff, right? You and your dad went to games, right?
Yeah, sort of, kind of. I mean, I would tell you this is like bad dad stuff. Like, I'm not entirely sure my kids could navigate the rules of baseball. And I'm not talking about the infield fly rule. I'm literally talking about swing and a miss third strike, or, you know, like drop third strike. Like, and that's probably,
so if I brought your kids on for fun over a crab cake, just totally for fun.
Right.
And I said, how many innings in a game?
Yeah, no, not going to get that one. They're not going to get that.
So this is my Swedish girlfriend at Yankee Stadium 25 years ago who, like when I said ball and strike, the word didn't align with.
They have lacrosse players. They never played softball, and we don't really watch, you know. Yeah, it's an event. Just
I'm
like
not bad dadding you. You're running around with a lacrosse stick like everybody else.
I know.
Which is one of the problems.
It still feels bad dad. Like, my daughters will never play football, but they definitely have a better understanding of the rules of football than the rules of baseball. And a bad dad, again, they're not football experts, right? Because I can only captivate their attention for about 15 minutes.
Bro, but you can't make, you know, my parents wanted me to play the French horn. I tried for a week. You know what I mean? My mother wanted me to be the tap dancer on Lawrence Welk. She took me to tap dance. That didn't last 15 minutes.
Yeah, I don't pressure.
Like, I remember this shit, man. I was 7 years old. You remember what you were introduced to, and then you're like, no, I don't think so at that time. Right, now I wish when it came to picking up chicks, oh my God, like dancing would have been the number one skill. You know, my mom was looking out for me at Colgate in 1974 when she took me into tap dance,
arts and
crafts. I don't want any part of that, man. I wanted to play ball, you know?
Right. No, I think there is this element of tradition, and there are these little things. Like, you will hear lots of people tell the story about, like, when my aunt used to take me to Oriole games at Memorial Stadium, and we always did the scorebook, right? I mean, that's what we did the entire game.
Did she get the good tickets and like book. Really treat you like? I mean,
no, it wasn't about where we sat. I mean, it was fun. We had a good time. I don't really remember. All I remember is sitting in them seats, keeping score in the program, and everybody, like lots of people, tell the program story.
And she taught you how to do it.
Yeah, right.
With a pencil.
And we all, you know, lament that that's not a thing anymore, and no one will ever do that again. And da da da. And I mean, the world just changes. You know, I mean, how?
I don't mind that. I just wonder what happens to this when there's nobody to fill it, and nobody cares, and they can't figure it out. That's all.
Well, we're gonna put a lid on it, and we're gonna play esports inside it. Because I don't know what else you do. I mean, that's the competing time. Think about all the time that's spent on their devices when we didn't have devices.
See, I hate to hear this, but I need to hear this, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're the one that sits in the house with two kids on the couch that are staring at their phone, same as when I'm in the airport or anywhere else with other young people, same as my wife and I, who don't look at each other for an hour and a half sometimes and don't say things because we'll text each other from the other room if I'm in your door.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
COVID definitely accelerated the, you know,
in-home disconnect?
Melting. Yeah, the melting of my children's brains. No doubt about it. I mean, there's an addiction to YouTube or Roblox.
Well, you had to stay home. What the hell else were you doing?
Yeah, exactly. And everybody was around
everybody.
And you had
a George Jetson device that would take you to the stars. We had to go to the library and get like the Encyclopedia Britannica, right? Literally.
Right. And because it wasn't just like these intermittent time periods, it was, you know, my wife and I want a break too. So we're tired of arguing with them about putting the device away, and they just won. They're just more resilient. You know, they just wear you down. And
did you win with your parents?
You finally give up and you're like, fine, just play on the damn thing. I don't care. So it's going to be hard to come back from all of this, but sports is that outlet that is almost a necessity. Like, I have to make sure my kids stay engaged and involved in something. Otherwise, they're going to be in the damn iPad. So,
okay. So the lacrosse stick, and they love that. So you don't care so much if they love softball or baseball, because dad isn't all that into it either. Dude, I would not care at all if my grandkids, there'd be no shame in them not wasting their life watching Freddie Freeman. Yeah, like literally for me, it's a big world, and I've come a long way after building a life around it. So I'm not urinating upon it. I'm just simply saying the value of it at this point. Billy, I'll say it. By the way, Bill Cole's here, and we're going to wrap up here because we're talking about baseball. But I've been on my ass, on my back, in pain most of the month of October, okay? So October's pretty special to me in a lot of ways because baseball was always special to me, right? And my birthday is October 14th. So there was always this point where ALCS, NLCS, big games, Orioles are in, Yankees are in, Royals are in, Phillies are in. Somebody's playing. It's always a part of my birthday and birthday week. The Orioles played game 3 of the 1983 World Series on the 14th of October. It was a Friday night. So I know my birthday, right? So I'm on my ass. I can't really do anything other than lay in bed and not like look up, moving around her, trying to stay off my phone where I'm doing awful things to my back while looking at my phone. Baseball was on all day, every day. It was on like 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 7 o'clock, Giants, Dodgers, Cardinals, like all of these teams, right?
Man.
Rays. I found it unwatchable, bro. You know what I mean? Like what I used
to
rush home. I'm talking rush home in 1980, 81, 82 to get off the bus, to run up the street for the 3:05 start of the Royals and the Yankees and the Cardinals and the Brewers. And like, missing a pitch would have been blasphemy. Like, I begged my parents to write me a pass to get me out of seventh period and come pick me up so I didn't miss the pregame with Bob Costas. You know?
But you only had one, right? Like, there was only one thing, and if you missed it, you couldn't see it again. There wasn't another one on right after it.
SportsCenter didn't even exist.
Right. So the novelty of that stuff, the idea that I can, like, I don't even sit down at 1 o'clock to watch a 1 o'clock Ravens game.
Well, we're talking about an era where people would pay $75 to go to the Towson Center to watch a fight on a television screen.
Right. I will DVR the Ravens game let it get a you know, half hour ahead so that I can fast forward through the commercials.
We talked you about know what this. I mean? Like, you know, Dennis talked about this too. I don't know how you people do it. I have no idea how you tape delay. You know, the first time I did that was when I got a DVR, and this was back in before the internet, because there was no like Twitter or anything like that. I was still living in White Marsh, so it had to have been 01, 02, 03 in that era. And there was a Sunday afternoon,
right?
Where I could, right, exactly, that era. And I took the liberty of sleeping in an hour, working in an hour, going to the mall, getting a call, whatever I wanted to do, that I could watch the whole game, but only invest 2 hours and 8 minutes instead of 3 hours and 20 minutes, right?
Right,
but I gave that up. I mean, the minute Twitter happens and whatever, I don't know how anyone doesn't live time a sporting event that they care about, that they care about.
Look, this is how good I've got it now. I will go to bed at halftime on a Monday night and DVR the balance of the game, and I will go out of my way to avoid knowing the outcome the entire
how
day
is that
of
possible?
Tuesday. The entire day of Tuesday, so that I could go home after work and finish the game.
No. There's no way to do that, right?
I mean, you know, you kind of know, but
you
don't
friend.
Totally know. Maybe.
Bill Cole is here. I want to give a shout out to our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We're back on the beat here this week. I am triple time, quite frankly. Silver Spring Mining on Thursday with a whole bunch of cool people in Perry Hall. Councilman David Marks, Gary Risling, Rob Santoni from Wise is coming by. Friday, we're in Fells Point. We're going to be at Chop Tank with Alex Smith and the Atlas Group. Ron Furman's coming over with the whole Furman family to tell old Max's stories. Eddie Lauer's going to come by with his guitar. Merritt Dworkin's going to come by and talk about the farmer's market that happens every week. We'll talk about flooding and all that crazy stuff in Fells Point. And I don't know, probably a whole bunch of other people. Tony Tochterman's coming by, my first ever sponsor. We're going to talk about my first fly fishing event. And then next week, Fadley's on Wednesday with Katie O'Malley. Friday, we are at Nick's Grandstand Grill in Timonium with Tommy and a whole bunch of other people. Hope to get Leonard Raskin out, some other friends. And Todd Schuller can't come because it's something about, I don't know, football or something, and Miami and the Ravens or something. And then after that, we're with the mayor on the 17th at Coco's in Lauraville. It's been a long time. Marcella, I'm sorry, we're finally getting there. And that'll be lunchtime on the 17th. And Bill Cole, you're invited to this. Evan Brown and I just closed the deal that December the 9th, we're going to begin my 30th anniversary with a crab cake tour stop at the Beaumont. He's going to put the crab cake on special for the holidays at the Beaumont. And we're going to talk about recipes, different stuff like that. So at some point, you got to come get a crab cake, brother, right?
That sounds fun. Yeah, no, I love those guys. So that would be fun.
All right, so I'm brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. We're out doing the crab cake tour, 30th anniversary celebrations, drinking. I was out of coffee when the damn segment started. Bill Cole, tell me what you do. You get on roofs and you fix people, especially this time of year after all this rain, right? Like, it's been a big month for you.
Yeah, commercial roofing and solar. Our world is riddled with supply chain issues just like everybody else. So I guess the piece of advice is if you're planning something to happen next summer, it may be too late. Like, we're getting delivery dates of,
well, you can't put bubble gum up there and replace
October,
it for
October,
right?
Year from now. Yeah.
You need the parts, right?
You do, and there's only so much like redesigning. Like, we're taking stuff and we're saying, okay, we have these 8 items, we don't have those 2. Let's try and rework it so that we can get just as good a quality, but use the products that are available. And it's becoming borderline impossible. So my suggestion for anybody in the commercial space that might need a roof or think they need a roof, we should talk about some kind of repair plan to bide time so we can get farther down the road. And if you have any hopes of getting your roof done in 2022, those discussions need to happen now.
Solutions. So
it's crazy. I mean, it's really challenging.
Well, I mean, strategy is everything in life, right? And somewhere along, no one strategized for shutting every part of the world down at some point over the last 18 months. Bill Cole's here. Cole Roofing, well, Coordinate Energy.
I know. I know we probably should have started with this because this is a much more meaty topic than
next week.
But the other one was fun. But the idea that I don't think people realize how close we are teetering on the line of like more people going back out of work because there's not enough stuff to do the work. You know, think about all the people that pick up jobs for the holiday season. If there's not a lot of stuff in the stores to buy.
Well, let's go back to the restaurant thing, right? If there's no food, you don't have a restaurant, period.
Right.
Easy.
Right.
Easy enough.
So,
all right, dude, we'll take that on next week, all right? We'll be here.
Yeah,
and we have Ravens in Miami. We have Ravens taking a little time off, going to Chicago. I'm hoping to get my back together so I can eat some legitimate Chicago style pizza. So I'm looking to do that. All of our Raven coverage can be found out at Baltimore Positive and, of course, brought to you by Royal Farms. Real fresh, real fast. And I was so hungry on Monday night that I walked up to the Burks Royal Farms and I got two delicious chicken bread. I have one in the refrigerator. I've been staring at it. I'm like, that's going to wind up on a salad that I picked up from Wise over the weekend as well. So we're eating well around here. I was at State Fair the other night. Did that crazy porky fig shank of thing that I'm going to have for leftovers today. I'm eating well. It's November. I had our friends from Wise on talking about good nutrition in November. I said, well, we put nuts in the chocolate chip cookies. So that's where I am, and I can't find eggnog right now. They're out of eggnog. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570 Taos in Baltimore. We never stop talking. Eggnog, pumpkin, Baltimore Positive.